one more question is the sort of implications of nanoparticles. Because I feel like while I was reading your articles and your work, the sense I got was that your research was more about how to make more stable nanoparticles and sort of like, you know, narrowing size distribution and adding coumarin and things like that, making them more stable because nanoparticles are very reactive as, you know, their properties change and things like that. So I was just wondering if you can talk more about the implications of nanoparticles and, you know, kind of how important your work is in that aspect and field, if you could.
Yeah, so in the macromolecules paper, I think the first one, nanoparticles are a means to an end in the sense that nanoparticles were a model system for us to utilize to look at how size performs properties. And people were doing these studies in thin films, and there was a lot of controversy in thin films. And we thought moving to nanoparticles would help us ease this tension. And nanoparticles being a different system and being processed in a different manner would allow us to do things that others can't do with thin films. And so there, you know, a couple of things we've done with nanoparticles that I didn't have time to touch on, and how they allowed us to advance our understanding of the glass transition. And I'll give an example. So I said the glass transition is not a thermodynamic transition; it's a kinetic transition. Basically, your molecules get frozen in that state as you're cooling down. But as you're cooling down, two things take place. You have lower thermal energy, you're cooling temperature, but then you have kind of increase in density, right? And both of those contributions contribute to the sluggishness of your molecules before they freeze in. And glass scientists would like to know which one of those has the bigger contribution. Is it the cooling down or the increase in density? How do you separate out those two? Well, one way to do it is to create a constant volume system and change temperature and measure dynamics such as viscosity or relaxation time. Now, if you put on your experimental hat and take a step back, say, I have this block of polymer, this glass forming system. I want to cool it down. Of course, I know it's naturally going to want to, you know, contract. But I want to keep it constant volume. So that means I would likely have to change pressure. And I want to measure its viscosity up until the point where the viscosity goes to infinity, and then I know it's the glass. How can I do this? So I want to cool down a polymer, keep it constant volume, and measure viscosity. So this is actually very hard to do. And it hadn't been done. But we did it, and I didn't share this with you. But we didn't do it with block of polymer, we did it with nanoparticles. And as it turns out, these nanoparticles that you then encapsulate with the silica shell gives you a constant volume geometry. If I heat those particles, they can expand because the silica expansivity is so much different that the volume of the particle is effectively constant. And we weren't making the particles to do that, but then we realized that, oh man, it's a constant volume system. And of course, the beauty is we can change the size of the particles, so we can make them really large, and so there's really no size effects. But put the silica shell on them, and then realize it's still a constant volume. So then the only thing we had to do now, and so we realized when we changed temperature, the volume couldn't change. The only thing we had to do now was figure out a way how to measure the mobility of the polymer inside the silica shell. And we figured that out. And so then we were the first group to ever essentially measure glass forming dynamics on cooling in a constant volume system. And so, however the dynamics were changing as we were cooling down were only due to temperature, not volume, because it couldn't change. And so we were able to separate that out and quantitatively say, what is the contribution to your increase in viscosity to just temperature change? And not only could we do it in bulk, because particles we can make them smaller, we can actually see how that changed with confinement. So in that paper,
macromolecules paper, we just looked at glass transition, but the nanoparticles allowed us to do other things and gain new insight that you couldn't about the glass transition. So we were using nanoparticles just as a model system. In the soft matter papers, when we were making the particles by precipitation, the major contribution there is that if you were to go to the Dow, the DuPonts, the BASFs, the big chemical companies that all make nanoparticles, they all make them by emulsion polymerization on large scales, and they're very profitable. They've been doing it for a while. But that paper presents a very new approach to making particles that actually may compete with emulsion polymerization. And so we think that's what the uniqueness of that paper is really a new and alternative route of making particles. So the implications there may be huge if this technology is ever picked up by one of those larger companies. Of course, I mentioned the graduate students started a startup based on this, and of course they're going to use the technology to make homopolymers and particles as well. But I think the implications there is just a really new technology of making particles that may allow you to save costs in making them, but then also to do things that emulsion polymerization won't allow you to do. So, for instance, I don't think emulsion polymerization readily allows you to make Janus particles. If they did, I think they would be commercially available already. Because that's how these big companies make homopolymer particles. And which means they already have the infrastructure to make Janus particles by emulsion polymerization if they could do it. But our process, without any modifications to it whatsoever, allows us to make Janus particles. So I think that's what's going to be the major contribution there. And the collaboration with Celeste, I think the major contribution there is really the idea that Cumberman molecules are actually stabilizers, and that they actually allow you to stabilize polymer nanoparticles that otherwise would not be stable. And so I think we demonstrated in that case that when you have these PCL particles without Cumberman molecules on them, they're not stable. And we follow that up with other polymer systems as well, that when you add Cumberman molecules on them, they act as stabilizers. So I think that was the real insight there. We thought about ways of advancing that, such as using Cumberman molecules as ways of attracting other essentially elements to the particle. So if you had, you had your polymer particle with the cumarine on the surface, if you had another gold particle or some other type of ligand that also had a cumarine attached to it, then it could come to the surface and you could react those and keep them there. And so we thought about that as another potential application, but I think I'm satisfied with that paper just by saying that the demonstration or the real insight there was that cumarine can stabilize particles.
Mm-hmm.